Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Back in November of 2016, Glenn Beck, ex-CNN, ex-Fox News Channel, current bellows-in-chief at the website The Blaze, was on a comprehensive PR tour, begging the media to accept him as a changed man. He visited the camps of the enemy, Rolling Stone, Vice, Charlie Rose, MSNBC, The New York Times, to pronounce himself chastened and Donald Trump a historic threat. He was contrite, introspective, and pathetic. After a decade of vitriol, incitement, and literal demonization, he was backpedaling at 60 miles an hour.
I am reinforcing and I'm retooling for the future, as every business should be, knowing that if you don't retool every 3-4 years, you're going to be out of business.
But last Saturday, Beck said this.
You know what? I've had enough. I'll vote for him in 2020. Gladly, I'll vote for him in 2020.
Why the 180? Beck says it's a reaction to the media's reaction to something Donald Trump said last Friday in a speech about immigrants.
We have people coming into the country, or trying to come in. We're stopping a lot of them. But we're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals.
What got Beck's back up, he says, is that the media took Trump out of context. He was talking about MS-13, the gang, not about all immigrants. And on Saturday, Beck was so triggered.
And I saw yesterday how the press was all reporting the same damn story that Donald Trump was calling MS-13 gang members, they left that out of the story, animals, and they were spinning it as if he was saying that about all immigrants. I'd had enough. I'd have enough. Media, if you can get me, Glenn Beck, to do this, and in case you're only listening to us on radio, I just donned a red Make America Great Again hat.
Gosh, that sounds familiar. There's our old Glenn rejoining the fight against them. His whole shtick has always been about warning you about them.
We're done as a nation. When Mitch McConnell says, now is not the time to end abortion, we're done as a nation. We're not going to get any more warnings on this. Evil is rampaging right now. It is beyond anything that I have ever seen anywhere in my life. And if you think it's going to stay put, if you think it's not going to grow, if you think this is as bad as it could get, you are sadly mistaken.
Part polemicist, part conspiracy theorist, part televangelist, Beck's special sauce is what logicians call the fallacy of favorable enumeration, and what the rest of us call cherry picking, selecting unconnected facts or bizarre non-facts and drawing connections between them as to reveal some sinister pattern. It's a classically empty form of argument, not to mention very often just Looney Tunes. Here's Beck talking about FEMA concentration camps where the government can lock up troublesome patriots.
They're not FEMA trailers, FEMA prisons, FEMA camps. If you trust our government, it's fine. If you have any kind of fear that we might be headed towards a totalitarian state, look out, buckle up. We are a country that is headed towards socialism, totalitarianism, beyond your wildest imagination.
Plus, just enough ad hominem to keep it all interesting. Michelle Obama is a monster. Al Gore is Hitler. Bill Clinton is the Antichrist. Oh, and fat people don't deserve to live.
You know those fat people that sit in their couch, and I mean really fat. I mean, not like me. I mean the people who, like, their skin grows into the couch, and then, you know, they call the fire department, they cut them out of the wall, and then they have to bring in a truck, and then they take them to the hospital. I say let them die. I say punish the person who's been bringing them the milkshakes that allowed them to eat and not get up off the couch. Maybe, am I too harsh?
Yes, Glenn, much. When I spoke to him in November 2016, just days before the presidential election, in the middle of his empathy tour, I asked Glenn Beck how exactly had he changed.
You're different. Different how? I don't know. I'm trying to be a better listener. You know, it's one thing to come out, 3 years ago and say, you know, holy cow, not my intent, and I made things much worse, I think.
That was the Megyn Kelly interview, right?
Yes.
And we'll get to that. What is different now from the course correction that you tried to make 3 years ago?
I mean, it's an ongoing thing from there. And I said in that interview how I don't know what I would have done differently. And I still don't necessarily know what I would have done differently other than shut your mouth more and listen more.
Well, who was the old Glenn Beck, the one who was running his mouth too much and listening too little?
The same guy. I still believe the same things. I still have the same principles. But my principles weren't always on display. And it's what's causing me so much trouble with this Donald Trump thing. You know, I don't agree with Hillary Clinton at all. And I think she's wildly dangerous with the corruption just in the FBI and the Justice Department. But that doesn't mean that I lose my principles and do whatever it takes to stop her or to sign on board with somebody who, yes, is trying to stop her, but also doesn't reflect my principles.
Well, let's talk about Trumpism. We have this presidential candidate who has made many unsubstantiated charges. He has shown no interest in the law, domestic or international. He's threatened allies. He's cozied up to enemies. He's espoused policies that would trample on the Bill of Rights, all playing to a crowd that you have been inciting for more than a decade. Did you create Trumpism?
I think inciting is a rather inflammatory word. When I went around in 2004, and I was trying to say at that time, people feel like they're disconnected from the system. My intent was to let off steam. For instance, the 9/12 Project, which is always confused with the Tea Party. I was actually against the Tea Party when it first started. And I started something called the 9/12 Project, which was wildly different. And it was based on 9 values and 12 principles. And I said, we can't make this about politics. This has to be about principles. It's why my audience should be gone right now. But my audience actually has held stable in the ratings. Now, Sean Hannity and everybody else is way through the roof because they're playing into it.
You told the New York Times, quote, we need to listen to one another as human beings and try to understand one another's pain. Now, I think you were speaking specifically of Black Lives Matter, but in general, you were making a case for empathy, correct?
Yes.
Riff.
You know, the one thing that that I didn't do in 2008 and 9, I hadn't studied Martin Luther King like I have in the last few years. And Martin Luther King had it right. And our entire society is built on winning. And when we're set to win, we all lose. We have to find a way to reconcile with one another. And it doesn't mean that we agree with one another, but we have to listen. And there are these groups, for instance, Black Lives Matter. I don't agree with the leadership and their stated goals, but that doesn't mean that I don't listen to the people who are part of that movement. And that's where we missed it on the Tea Party. And what you're seeing with Donald Trump is the fact that the media never listened. They immediately deemed them all racists. Well, you're seeing now that there is a racist group. It's called the alt-right. And everybody needs to band together and corral those people and make sure we can identify them. And not group them into one large group and say, everybody who is a conservative is a racist. No, that's what the media did. And that's why so many people gave up on even being listened to. And because I experienced that myself and I saw it happen, I realize, wait a minute, that's what's about to happen, except the right is going to do it to Black Lives Matter. We have to listen to the people who are actually in there, who are saying, look, there's a problem in our community. We need help. How do we solve this?
Is the world ready to take listening and empathy lessons from Glenn Beck?
No.
Well, precisely. I mean, you have, just to cite a few examples, declared your disgust with families of 9/11 victims. You have used...
That's untrue. I was raising money for people that were affected by Hurricane Katrina. When people started to see people shooting and looting, I said, those are not the average person. That is the anomaly that you are seeing on television. At the same time that was happening, there were 9/11 victims' families who were trying to bilk and milk the system. And I said specifically, there are those people that you look at and you say, oh my gosh, I don't want anything to do with them. I'm so sick of all of them. No, don't be sick of all of them. Don't lump everybody into one group. When you see somebody you disagree with, especially when you're being asked to open your heart.
Glenn, permit me to take you on a trip down bad memory lane.
You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. It took me about a year. And I had such compassion for them, and I really, you know, I wanted to help them, and I was behind, you know, let's give them money, let's get started, you know, all of this stuff. And I really didn't, you know, all the 3,000 victims' families, I don't hate all of them. I hate about probably about 10 of them. But when I see, you know, 9/11 victim family, you know, on television or whatever, I'm just like, oh, shut up. I'm so sick of them because they're always complaining, and we did our best for them.
Okay, now I don't really want to relitigate the issue of...
No, you don't have to because you've played it out of context. Now, nobody's going to say this, but out of 3,000, are you telling me there aren't 10 of 3,000 people that are whining about one thing or another that annoy you? Yes. Was my language inflammatory to say I hate them? I don't hate them. I never hated them. This is probably what would change from me. I didn't realize the damage that I was doing. And I have to tell you, anybody who does 5 hours at their desk every day, does it all live, all unscripted, and was where I was at the time believing what I believed, everyone will make mistakes. I'm not shying away from that. That audio, I said that. I would like to see people put it in context. Now, let me ask you a question, Bob. What good is relitigating Glenn Beck? I told you from the beginning, should you listen to me on compassion? No. I'm the worst possible guy, but I'm the only guy right now that is actually standing up against his own tribe, if you will, and saying, I'm not going to worry about Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to worry about the Democrats. I'm not going to worry about the liberals. I'm just going to say, I'm not going over the cliff with the rest of the people in my tribe. And what, I mean, you don't have, but what good does it do now? Destroying Glenn Beck. Bob, people have been doing that for a long time. You're a little late to the party. What can we do to heal the nation instead of dividing? If you don't believe me, that's fine. Why have me on the show?
Well, let's have that conversation. You have mentioned that retooling or adjusting to the current business conditions is just part of the process of running a business like The Blaze or the Glenn Beck brand.
I'm going out of business. Haven't you heard that?
Well, there have been layoffs. The marketplace hasn't necessarily been kind to you lately. And if you do a little market analysis, on the paranoid wingnuttery side of it, you're losing market share to the likes of Alex Jones and his ravings.
Good.
And on the hardcore nativist side, you're losing share to Breitbart.
Good.
He's got the alt-right wrapped up. And then there's the Daily Caller and others. So are you adjusting your message as a question of principle or because you're just trying to suss out a better market
niche? What does that leave me
with,
Bob? What does that leave me with? Do you think anybody in your audience is going to suddenly come to Glenn Beck and say, oh my gosh, I love this guy. I'm going to forget everything he said because I've got everybody on the left reminding me exactly what he said for all time. So I'm going to give him a shot. Do you think that's going to happen? Do you think that the people, when I talk to you on NPR, when I talk to the New York Times or Charlie Rose, they look at that and go, oh, that's good. He's on our side. Or do they say, He's a total sellout. So where's my market, Bob?
Well, where is your market? And quick follow-up question, what's the purpose of the great 2016 Glenn Beck Empathy Tour?
This is the most remarkable interview I've ever done. And I've done some remarkable interviews.
Thank you. Why are you doing what you're doing?
You are so jaded that you can't even imagine that maybe somebody is doing it because they believe it.
Well, can I play you another piece of tape, if I might?
No, I've heard them all. You can play them and insert them into the interview.
I wish I could go back and be more uniting in my language, because I think I played a role, unfortunately, in helping tear the country apart.
Well, that was 3 years ago. Was that a trial balloon? Because as I understand it, not a whole lot changed after that sort of moment of contrition and to the place we are now. What was going on in those intervening almost 3 years?
A lot of soul searching, a lot of raising money to help people in the Middle East. We have raised $11 million and saved 4,000 people and moved them into safety from Syria and from Iraq. Held a rally of about 30,000 people. Also, over a year of standing for principles against somebody who I think is as dangerous as Donald Trump, and warning my own people who don't want to hear about the alt-right. They don't believe that there's such a thing as the alt-right. They believe this is a New York Times trope. Because who tells them that? Breitbart. Who tells them that? The Drudge Report. Who tells them that? Trump.
There have been a number of reinventions in your career, and you've acknowledged in the past that the Glenn Beck persona, what I would call the shtick, has elements of performance art. A rodeo clown is how you've described yourself. So have you fanned the flames of distrust in government and hatred and even insurrection as some sort of perverse entertainment? And just let me be clear, I regard that as a rhetorical question.
You're waiting for me to say something. You just said it was a rhetorical question, so.
Yeah, but I'd be happy to hear your response.
No, I don't think so. Hey, Bob, I really do wish you the best. I hope that someday you can take the time to find a moment where you give somebody the opportunity to actually change and try to do the right thing and stand not against the people where the crowds are cheering, but stand against the people where no one is cheering, where no one wants to stand, where no one wants to pay for anything, and know the difference between those two. And when you do, maybe you'll be able to see what I'm trying to do. But until that time, I'm deeply sorry that you misled us into thinking that this would be anything like a fair interview. And I thank you.
That interview first aired in November 2016. This has been an On the Media podcast extra. See you Friday.
Please forgive me, Mr. Trump, for predicting that you will sweep in 2020. Because every time I ever am for a candidate, they always lose. So I won't endorse you because that's the kiss of death. But I will tell you, the things that you have done as the president are remarkable. Remarkable. I yesterday, because of the New York Times.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.